Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I don't know why I did that.
Why are you bowing to me? I mean, not that
it's because we were
people bowing to me, because yay, I'm your queen, Jocelyn.
Finally. we were talking about pre-show, we were talking about Nintendo Direct, and I remember Iwata, he always starts it. He does that.
That is true. Where's your white gloves?
I think I got rid of them after I unboxed the Wii U.
You were so upset. You were just like, no more white gloves ever.
Garbage. Oh, no. It was a ceremonial burning. It's like, you know, it's like the changing of the flag. They burn their gloves after they change the flag, right? I don't know.
It's like a waste of gloves.
I guess it depends on where you come from.
Yeah, fair enough. So, what have you been up to this week? I'm going to preface this entire episode by telling you, guys, after taking Tuesday to do our Xbox Live event, which was awesome and fun, I pretty much spent the whole day doing Xboxy things, and then my parents are actually in town, so I haven't been playing a whole lot. I spent a day playing WoW, but other than that, I haven't played a whole lot this week. So, Ryan, what have you been playing this week?
You basically admitted that you just fought on Twitter about the Xbox event all week.
I did. I fought for 2 whole days with people on Twitter. I was just like,
ah! There was so much fighting. It was like the Battle of Helm's Deep with at replies. It was crazy. Yeah. You shall not pass hashtag or something. sorry, that is 2 completely different battles in that movie. I've seen The Lord of the Rings. But let's move on to a different kind of trilogy.
A different war, if you would.
Yeah, the Gears of War. another GAO game, as someone described it to me.
You have the GAO game?
You have the God of War, and then you have the Gears of War, and when you abbreviate it, it turns into the GAO. Sounds like some sort of bad problem. Anyways, I rented Gears of War Judgment, another prequel that came out in March. You remember I played Gears of War Ascension. Or not Gears of War Ascension. God of War Ascension. I did that to myself.
I know. I've got to admit, when I first read this, when I thought that you'd copied notes from a previous week and that you hadn't filled in your notes yet, because I was like, didn't we just talk of something of war? Never mind. Different G.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll start this right off the bat. Judgment is a much better game than Ascension was. Ascension was kind of like, made you feel like the series is kind of tired, guys. I think you should have not put this game out and maybe let it rest so you could bring it back for the next generation. This still has that sort of inkling, but it's made by a different studio. It's made by People Can Fly. That doesn't really show. People Can Fly is kind of a crazy studio. Do you remember Bulletstorm?
Yes.
Okay, they did that game. And they're known for their wacky antics in their games, and this one is sort of subdued. It feels like a Gears of War game, which is great. And I quite enjoyed it. I played through the campaign, and you play as Baird and Cole. You haven't played Gears of War, have you?
We bought the first Gears of War game because everybody said that it was really, really good, and it was a game that Joel and I could sit and play on the same console, because we find that that's a problem, is that we want to play together, but there's not a whole bunch of local multiplayer games. Mm-hmm. So Gears of War was one that we picked up. I didn't really play it very much. Joel played it, got stuck, and hasn't picked it up since. I think there was like a big boss that like runs at you or something fairly early on in the game. And basically it's like one hit and you're dead. And Joel he tried it a few times and never really got past it and just kind of went, eh. And like moved on to other things because, yeah. I mean, when we bought Gears of War, we also bought we bought Borderlands, we bought Transformers, the first one, we bought, what else? There was like 3 or 4 games that we bought in that trip to GameStop. So it was one of those things like, oh, I'll totally pick it up later, and then he never picked it up later.
Well, I mean, to his defense, it's a game that came out 6 years ago, so it's of the older variety. But this is the 4th game in the series, and they mix it up, keeping it fresh with what is called the declassified missions, and basically you'll be walking through the start of a checkpoint. And you'll look to your left and you'll see this glowing gear on the wall. And when you walk up to it and you hit X, it says, okay, you can do this mission normally, or you could do it with giant cleaver swords. And like,
why wouldn't you pick giant cleaver
swords? Why wouldn't? Well, and yeah, and in the campaign, there are like kamikaze things that come at you with this giant cleaver sword, and you're like, I could never see a point where I need to use this because my gun is just better, right? But what the declassified stuff does is it mixes it up and causes you to think outside the box and say, okay, now I need to beat this mission with just sawed-off shotguns. So you're like running in and shooting them and running out, trying not to get killed. And they're more varied than that in the sense not just like weapon variations. They'll sometimes say, okay, every time you get hit, your vision blurs. Or there's gas leaking and you're slowly dying, so you need to rush through the mission.
So it's almost like Mass Effect 3, what they did with Hazards, where exactly. You have your map that you're used to, but then they throw in some kind of a twist, which I loved. I thought that really gave more life to multiplayer, which I haven't played in a while, and I really, really miss. I think about Mass Effect 3, like, probably every other day, and I'm just like, ah, I really want to play that right now, but nobody's playing anymore.
It's an old game. It's but yeah.
Isn't that so sad? It's a year old, and it's an old game. Nobody plays that now.
That doesn't make me sad. What makes me sad is that we can't really expect a Mass Effect game anytime soon. Yeah. I feel as though Mass Effect 4, or you know, technically the next Mass Effect game, is a whiles off, even though they are already talking about it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of sad. I think that's the saddest part about it, and I kind of want to revisit that world. But yeah, you're right. It's really like the Hazard stuff in the multiplayer, and sometimes it takes away from the mission where like, oh, now there's a giant sandstorm. It's like, well, great. I can't see anything, including all the nicely, you know, textured land.
Is this right from the very beginning, like the first time you play through a mission, or is this something that, like, in your second playthrough, it becomes an option?
No, this is right from the beginning, so that's kind of why some of the declassified stuff takes away from it, but considering I've played three Gears games, I actually welcomed it because it made me want to keep going, okay, what's the next declassified mission, and can I get three stars? Like, each sort of section, you're rated, and if you do the declassified mission, then you're more guaranteed to get three stars, but it also makes it harder.
Right.
So, I mean, I see where you're going. I mean, it's kind of weird that it's unlocked right from the beginning, but the campaign kind of, in comparison to the other Gears games, it's kind of bland. There's not a lot going on. You're kind of just moving from one point to the other, and you know how it ends because it's sort of just... Well, you know who lives, you know who dies, and, you know.
Oh, right, because it's a prequel.
Like most prequel games, like, you kind of know how it's going to end. It's about the journey, and when the journey isn't, you know, fantastic. I rented it, though, so, I mean, if you're a Gears fan, it's definitely worth the rent, because they do something weird, and in Gears 3, there's this whole section where Baird and Cole go off on a side adventure and then show up at the end of the game, and that whole side section isn't explained at all. And they actually give it to you in Judgment as a separate sort of campaign mode called Aftermath, and it sort of reunites all the characters from the prequel on this side mission. It's sort of convenient that, like, they never mention this extra character, Paddock, I think, and he just shows up in this side mission. He's like, oh, Baird's like, I don't want to go back there, I hate that place, and then all of a sudden Paddock shows up. It's like, hey, it's Paddock, how's it going? Fancy meeting you here. He's the only talking human being. Everyone else is zombies and locusts, so that's convenient. But that was actually really cool, because it kind of felt like they had completed sort of the Gears of War story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how they make another Gears of War game. Unlike God of War, they could probably just keep going back to that well.
That's true. There's a lot to pull from there, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it, and for anybody who... actually, you know what? Gears of War Judgment, if you are interested in getting back into it and you haven't played the other Gears, you could play Judgment. Aftermath probably wouldn't make any sense, but Judgment is good, and it's a nice intro into the series, but I think the best Gears game you could probably play and jump into is 2 and then go into 3. 1 is old and kind of stale, but yeah, I don't know. This one's definitely a rent, I think. If you know, you might as well rent it now while you still can.
Yeah. God. That's a topic for later on in the show.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I did have a little bit of time this week to play some WoW. We had patch 5.3 that just dropped, which is the patch that you really weren't looking forward to, because it did the huge XP drop from 85 to 90. So, I mean, I logged in one day and it was, you know, my 8, because I'm about halfway through, or I was halfway through 85, and I had 13 million XP that I had to get to 86. And then I logged in again and it was 8, and I was almost there, and I was just like, oh my God, like, I'm really, we only just got to Pandaria, Joel and I, last night, and I'm kind of a little bit upset about it, because I feel like I'm already most of the way through 85, so being most of the way through 85, I'm going to end up rushing through Pandaria, and no, I'm not going to see everything, so...
I don't know if we talked about this when they first announced it, but do you think that they've, and again, I'm not a WoW expert, so I don't know the last time they did this for when Cataclysm launched, but do you think they're doing this because they might have another expansion coming out, like, sooner rather than later?
I hope so. I imagine that we will get another expansion announcement this year because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe not this BlizzCon, but the next one is 20 years of WoW. So I would be really surprised, Warcraft, not World of Warcraft. It's 10 years of World of Warcraft and it's 20 years of Warcraft.
Okay.
So I would be really surprised if they didn't do something big. Now, whether that's another WoW expansion or whether that's their, is it Titan project?
Yeah, Titan.
One of the two, I think we're going to get announced this year and released next year, I think. So, I mean, it could be because they're just kind of lowering your XP needed to get to endgame of WoW, because that's where everything happens now, right? Is all endgame, or that's what everyone keeps telling me. I'm not actually there yet. But, you know, to kind of finish up WoW and move into something new, or to prep for another expansion, you know, one way or another. So... I was a little bit upset because I feel now that, you know, Mists of Pandaria has only been out since September, so it's 6 or 7 months that it's been out, and now they've, like, I think it's 35%, they dropped the XP, so it was 13 million on the dot, and now it's, like, 8.8 million or something that you need, so it's a 35% drop in every level all the way up through to 90.
Were people asking for this? Like,
I don't know. I don't really know why they do this.
I feel confused.
I think that they're trying to just allow more players to push more alts up to end game, I guess, but I don't really know why they want to move the population along so much. To me, it just seems like that would overcrowd end game, but again, I've never been there, so who knows?
Maybe end game isn't crowded enough.
Oh, well, yeah, and that's, you know, that's possible as well, but yeah, so that was the biggest change that I noticed, and like I said, I'm only 2 million XP away from getting to 86. And I only just got to Pandaria because, you know, I was running around doing some archaeology, doing some pet battles, just kind of like leveling up some of my skills. I got to my Zen Master in archaeology, yay! Which means I maxed out my skill, which is fun. So, you know, I was just kind of running around doing extras. I wasn't doing any questing, no PvP, no nothing. And I got like 5 million XP. So they're just throwing XP at you now. For doing pretty much nothing except for, like I said, exploring, archaeology, and pet battles, and almost more than half of a level at 85. It's crazy.
Wow. So how far ahead are you of Joel?
He just hit 85 last night, so I'm about 5 million XP ahead of him.
Oh, do you hold that over? It's like, oh no, you have to do the dishes, Joel. I'm 5 million XP ahead of you.
Yeah,
you could say it just like that. I'm sorry, Joel, if you're listening to this. I don't think I'm giving her ideas, because if I know Jocelyn, she's already done this.
You are now.
Oh, great.
Oh, yes, it's all your fault now, Ryan.
I didn't hear about that one.
But they did change a lot other than the XP requirements in 5.3. One thing that's really cool, there's quite a few really cool changes to the game that they've implemented. I mean, there's more endgame content. There's another world event, which actually happens just outside of Orgrimmar, which is really cool because, I mean, I know that, like, the Barons and Durotar, however you say it, Durotar, whatever.
Come on.
When you never hear people say these things, you just make them up in your head how you think that they should sound. They're all made up names.
Anyway. Phil says it all the time. He's like, Durotar. He doesn't sound like that. That's more the other guy. The crazy one you're going to kill at the end of the game. Thank you. It's not a spoiler.
But anyway, so, you know, like, those areas south of Orgrimmar have been really, really empty for a really long time. So the patch puts a scenario right outside the gates of Orgrimmar, and, you know, it's exciting. Like, I mean, I'm running around this area doing pet battles and stuff that used to have nobody in it, and there's level 90 Alliance and Horde all over the place. And I was just like, this is actually really exciting because, I mean, you get to see all the armor and the mounts and the companions and the pets and all of these things that I've never seen before all of a sudden are right there. And I'm just like, oh, that's awesome. You know, Orgrimmar inside the gates has always been a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, with Pandaria and with Lich King, you had, like, big major cities that were off the main continent, so a lot of the endgame stuff and all, like, people kept their Hearthstones at Dalaran so that they, you know, they weren't always in Orgrimmar all the time. So having this patch right outside the gates is actually really, really cool. They're exposed to a whole lot of new things.
Yeah, mainly Alliance.
Yeah.
Scum of the Earth.
Is jarring when you run outside the gates of your capital city and it's just like, whoa, level 90 Alliance. Glad I'm not on a PvP server. Jeez.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I spent my early days in WoW were spent on a PvP server, and there are those times I played as a rogue. Me and my friend were rogues, and there are those times it's like, oh, there's a no mage just killing things in Teneris. Let's go gank them, right? And that's fun, but it's not fun when you're in Stranglethorn Vale and you're trying to quest, and then, like, this level 8, or I guess at the time a level 60 troll hunter comes up on his raptor and just, you know, goes. You go into Longgrass and you do not come out, because those those troll hunters are pretty vicious.
Are they?
Wait, troll hunter? Oh, no,
yeah,
wait, I was
like, troll, dude, what?
Whoa, I just made it a mission, I guess I should say this, is that when I first played WoW, I was Alliance.
Oh, man.
And even worse, I was a night elf. A night elf rogue.
Oh,
that was
I'm
a long
so
time ago. Yeah, the Alliance is weird. And it's true, all the humans look like they have porn mustaches. I had a mage called Jeebus, and he had the greatest porn mustache. Jeebus, the mage with the porn mustache.
Nice.
And he danced like this.
Oh, man. So, anyways, one of the changes that I'm really excited about, because, like I said, with all the Children's Week stuff, I got really into PvP, and I've really been enjoying it. So there is a new PvP battleground, but they are now letting you queue for battlegrounds as what you want your role to be. So you queue up as a DPS, a tank, or a healer, and then that allows them to kind of balance the teams a little better because, I mean, yes, battlegrounds generally, I mean, I know Alterac Valley used to go on for days and days and days, but now with the cross-realm, what?
Hours, not days.
No, I was reading wikis and they said back in vanilla it used to go on forever.
Well, forever, but, like, hours is forever in a battleground. But
they said days.
I remember trying to play Alterac Valley on dial-up. That never worked.
Oh.
Warsong Gulch worked on dial-up.
Yeah.
Same. And Arathi Basin almost worked on dial-up, but you had to make sure to stay away from the Giant Pact. So you never went to the central area, which was the... I'm trying to remember. The Lumber Mill, I think, is in the middle. No, that's not right.
No,
the stables.
Yeah.
Blacksmith?
Farm.
No, the farm's down in the Alliance starter, or the Horde. Anyways.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. One of the points. So anyways, what it allows you to do is queue up and then they can balance the teams a little bit better because, I mean, there's nothing worse, even though they're only 10 to 15 minute battlegrounds, there's nothing worse than going in and seeing that your team that you're up against on the Alliance side has five healers, and you're just like, well, I'm not going to be able to kill anybody because there's one healer per DPS person or whatever, and you're just like, oh man. So,
and the worst part is that one of them's a druid. Are druids still good healers?
I don't even know.
I feel like they are.
I don't even know. But anyway, so by being able to queue up as your, not your class, but your role, then it allows them to balance the teams. And so that's really cool. That's a huge change. Really exciting. So basically we have that, as well as you can now do a loot specialization. So if you are a class that can switch between a role of tank to DPS, if you're more comfortable being DPS, then all you have to do is you can play in the class that you're comfortable with, but you can set your specialization to tank, and that way all of the gear that drops will be for that tank specialization. So then you can kind of gear up the class that you want to or the role that you want to try while playing what you're comfortable in. So it lets you kind of get the gear that you want without having to play the class that you're not having fun in. So I think that's kind of a cool change. It's a nice, like, you just default to whatever you normally play unless you change it,
right?
Which is just right-clicking your profile picture as always. But yeah, really cool change, I think. A really nice thing for Blizzard to do for a lot of people. I think they're really trying to get the whole alt thing and get people out of their comfort zone, so I think it's a cool change.
Well, I mean, I'll say it every time you bring up WoW, but it's a lie at this point. I really feel like I should get back into WoW.
Yep,
but I don't have any time. There's no time. I couldn't play anything else if I played WoW, and that's probably why I'm holding back.
That is a lie. I play lots of other things.
What did you play else this week besides yell at people on Twitter?
This week, parents came, and there was the Xbox event, so that doesn't even count. So
you played life, is what you're saying.
Yes.
So what you're saying is if I play WoW, the only other time I have is to play life.
Yes.
I already do that. I do it pretty well.
I play StarCraft. I play new things when they come out, and they are interesting to me. So
I play Blizzard games, it sounds like. I do play.
Okay, well, I had this conversation with Joel yesterday because I was like, oh, I feel so bad. I should play something else because all I've been playing is WoW, and I feel like all I do is talk about WoW. But then I was like, you know what? No other company right now is making a game compelling enough to pull me away from WoW. So why shouldn't I play WoW and talk about it? Because it's fun, it's what I'm enjoying playing, and that is what our show is about, is what you and I are enjoying playing. Because we don't have unlimited budgets, so we can't buy every single game that comes out, so we play what we like. So
people are...
it is what it is. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Hashtag deal with it. Oh, great. Now we're going to be fired from A-Move because we said deal with it. And everyone's going to come at us.
Oh, man.
Can we be fired?
I don't know.
Well, that's one way to find out. Yeah. Deal with it.
Deal with it.
Oh, please don't capture that.
With that said, Ryan and I really appreciate your continued support of our show, along with the support of our sponsor, Doghouse Systems. Use the code TheGamersIn to double your RAM when you purchase a new gaming rig. 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, but 16 does not become 32. That would be crazy. Head on over to DoghouseSystems.com and get your order on. Which brings us to Quickfire News.
Nintendo Direct for E3 gets a date. And that's like June 11th, not like a girlfriend or something. It took some time, but we finally know when Nintendo plans on dropping some info bombs direct to their fans' eyeballs. The E3 Nintendo Direct will take place on June 11th, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. Nintendo did promise the presentation would take place before E3, like press conferences proper, and it does, as the show opens 2 hours later at noon. Expect to get first looks at the new Wii U titles like Smash Brothers, 3D Mario, and Mario Kart.
An EA engineer states the Wii U is crap. We're thinking it, he's saying it. A software engineer at EA made some very negative comments about the Wii U on Twitter this last week. In response to an article posted on The Verge, the EA sports engineer said, quote-unquote, the Wii U is crap. It's less powerful than the Xbox 360. Poor online store, weird tablet, Nintendo are walking dead at this point. That was the start of a series of tweets saying EA was intentionally focusing on other markets, that Nintendo is not third-party friendly, and that they were still acting like it was 1990. EA's official response is that they have a strong partnership with Nintendo, although last week they stated that they had no Wii U titles in development, and many of their big titles slated for release later this year will not be made available on the Wii U platform.
Hmm. And more EA news. EA plans to support current gen through 2017, but obviously not the Wii U or the Wii. speaking at the Stifel 2013 Technology Conference in New York this week, EA CFO Blake Jorgensen confirmed that EA would support current generation systems well into the next generation system's lifespan. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone and really should serve, and this is not a quote, this is me talking. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone and really should serve as an example of what many publishers out there will be doing, especially Activision. So if you're unable to pick up an Xbox One or PS4 later this year, know that at least for a few years, you'll have some big games left to play.
Ouya is the people's console. Ouya has announced that their booth at E3 will be located outside of the conference, allowing anyone walking by to try the console, no credentials required. The system will be playable from June 11th through the 13th, with everything developers need to put on a killer demo. That is in quotes, that is not me. E3 itself starts on June 10th with presentations from Microsoft, Sony, EA, and Ubisoft. We will be doing another special episode of the Gamers Inn, much like our Xbox One reveal event episode, on Monday, June 10th, after the keynote presentations. Mm.
And this just in, Ouya is going to have candy at their booth, so everyone should go there. that's what it feels like. It feels really creepy.
It totally does.
I mean,
guys, come try it. Well, you'll love it, we promise.
Yeah, we're just outside the back alley. You know, bring money.
We probably couldn't actually afford a booth inside, so they were just like, guys, we'll just PR the shit out of this, and, you know, we'll make it look good. It'll be fine.
This is why we didn't get
an extension cord.
This is why we didn't get review units, Jocelyn. We're just beating it. I'm sure it's a great box or something. Anyways, I didn't help. Try Defiance for free this weekend. I'm going to definitely do that. Interested in trying out Defiance? Well, you're in luck, because Trion Worlds is offering a free weekend through Steam, as well as a 30% discount if you want to jump in full time. Be sure to give it a shot soon, as the free weekend ends Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. I like to think weekends usually last until 11:59, but who's counting? Also, in a similar fashion on their website... Also, in a similar fashion, Sci-Fi is offering episodes of the Defiance TV show on their website. What better way to enjoy an MMO than by watching a TV show about the MMO you're playing while you're playing it? Isn't that awesome?
More features are coming back to SimCity. Update 4 for SimCity dropped yesterday, May 23rd. The update re-enables some features as well as adding new ones, including dynamically changing global market prices, region filters, and leaderboards. Two new region designs were also available, with one being exclusive to early adopters. I'm not exactly sure what early adopters means, but early adopters. Maxis also
teased suckers is what it means.
Yeah, well, beta testers who paid money. Anyways, Maxis also teased their next set of DLC for SimCity called the Amusement Park Pack, although pricing was not made available.
Mm. Have you ever gone back to that game?
Briefly, but I'm going to go back one more time before I publish my review to make sure that these updates where they re-enable features are actually, you know, I want to make sure that I am still accurate before I rip them a new one, but yeah.
I updated. I still haven't launched it, but... Anyways, 38 Studios is preparing to sell off IP. Kurt Schilling's once grand 38 Studios is ready to sell its sole title, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning, and associated assets to an unnamed party in an effort to pay off its $130 million debt. This news comes from Providence lawyer Richard J. Land, who says, "Who knows what the value ultimately will be, but there is interest in the assets. Here's hoping it goes to a good home and someone is able to finish off what Kurt started with the Amalur MMO."
We have even more proof, people. A study has been completed and published out of Texas A&M, which found that consuming violent media as a child is not a predictor of future violent behavior. The study found that both genetics and social environment played a much larger role in behavior than media consumed. Shocker. Quote unquote, genetics alone don't seem to trigger criminal behavior, but in combination with a harsh upbringing, you can see negative outcomes. In our sample, experiencing maternal warmth seemed to reduce the impact of genetics on adult criminality. People may object morally to some of the content that exists in the media, but the question is whether the media can predict criminal behavior. The answer seems to be no. End quote. Grr, screw you all, you stupid people. So, hopefully soon, when combined with whatever other research has been commissioned by the U.S. government, we can stop talking about video games and other media as source of violence and start looking at some of the real issues. That was Jocelyn's little quickfire news rant. Sorry about that.
Like guns.
Yeah, there's that.
Or drugs, I guess.
So, that brings us to our topic of the week, which is going to be very similar to our talk on Tuesday, which was when we covered the Xbox event. But what we are going to do over our topic this week is actually compare the Xbox One to the PS4, do a little bit of talking about the whole used games conversation that's been going on since the Xbox One launch event, and then we did get some feedback that we're going to talk about in our listener feedback section about our comments on the Xbox One. So, Ryan, why don't you kick it off with our first story here, which is that the Xbox One is going to support 4K output.
Yeah, so Joss and I are millionaires, and we own 4K TVs, so we're really excited to hear that both the Xbox One and I believe the PS4 will support 4K output.
I'm not sure. I'm going to tell everybody right now that I have a little comparison chart here, and I don't even see 4K listed, but I mean, come on, that's a little bit intense.
I think that was something...
They right down at the bottom, AV hookups, it says, yep, 4K support for both, except for not the Wii U.
I'm pretty sure you could... if you had a... Okay, I will say, I don't know how 4K works, but I would assume it's backwards compatible with...
1080?
I don't know. I don't know technology, man. TVs are weird. But yeah, 4K supported by the Xbox One, interesting. They're not saying that games are actually going to be programmed with 4K in mind, are they?
Well, I imagine with 4K being so... I mean, it's beyond high-end right now, right? You can't just walk into a store and buy a 4K TV, or at least you couldn't last time I was in a Best Buy.
I don't think you could.
So, I mean, they're very high-end tech right now. It's going to be a long time before they're in living rooms. I mean, you could even argue, like, yes, you can go in and you can buy a 3D TV, but, I mean, how many people are actually watching 3D TV right now? Probably not many. If you are, woo, woo, there you go. There's some 3D popping in your face for you.
We're not programmed. You can't just do... I assume you did this. You can't... Yes, I did. You can't just do that. You can't just throw stuff at the camera. Look, guys.
I'm pretty sure that that's how 3D works.
Sorry.
Anyways, you know, like, these are technologies that we have to program for on the back end. The game developers have to develop for. So, I mean, yay, it supports it. Is it going to be anything that's actually relevant in the next couple of years? Probably not. So, good for you, Xbox, but, you know, meh.
But in all seriousness, I mean, it could become popular. Like, look at what happened with the Wii. When the Wii came out, did you own an HDTV? Because I didn't.
When the Wii came out, no.
So it's the same situation where Nintendo's like sitting high and mighty. It's like, HDTVs aren't quite at the point where they're in every house, so it's not a big deal. But
right.
Halfway through the generation, it was a very different story, and Microsoft and Sony were looking pretty awesome on an HDTV.
Very true. Yeah, that's very true. And I mean, like, I have a feeling that 4K might go the way, because, I mean, they're already talking about, is it 8 or 16? I can't remember the way that it goes, but they're already talking about creating the next generation after 4K already exists, so I kind of feel like 4K may go the way of 720, where, you know, like, the 4Ks are going to come in, some people who are right on the edge are going to buy them, but the majority of consumers are going to wait for the next iteration, which is already in the works, which is going to be 8 or 16, whichever way it goes. And so, I mean, 4K support is good, but, I mean, I feel like it's the same as saying we support 720 and then having 1080 come out. So, I mean, we'll have to see, but again, this is something a few years down the road. Something else that we didn't mention on Tuesday is that the Xbox is going to support avatars, which is what you currently have if you have an Xbox Live account. Or I think if you just have a, you don't have to have an Xbox Live account to have an avatar. It's just no one else can see it but you. Mm-hmm. But what they did say is that they are going to be focusing more on real images, which is okay, except that, I mean, I know I stream, obviously, my image out to the web on Friday nights to do the Gamers In, but I don't necessarily want a camera on me to, you know, like, I like my cartoony Xbox Live avatar. I don't really want to represent myself with my face on Xbox Live. You know, I kind of, I don't know, it just...
Well, a lot of people...
I feel like they're... The whole... I think I find the whole Kinect 2.0 thing a little bit intrusive, like measuring my heartbeat from across the room and, you know, taking videos of me and taking my picture. And I just... I find... I don't know. I find the integration of the Kinect a little bit much, and it's probably just because I don't have one right now and I don't game that way, but I find it to be a little bit... like, stop spying on me already.
Well, are they talking... They're not, though. This is in reference to, in the conference, we didn't see avatars at once. And where we thought we would see avatars with was with the sign-in sort of profile pic, right? And that was just... That was just a static image of him. It wasn't like a live video.
Yes, true. So, oh my god, can you imagine live video avatars?
It's like
that would be intense.
Okay, I'm gonna be
smiling all the time.
You're smiling all the time. Or let's be honest, when you're playing video games, you're relaxing, and on a Saturday morning, pants do not go on before 10 a.m. I mean, let's be realistic here. If you want to sit down and play a video game in your underwear,
don't you so much hate pants?
before 10 a.m. on a Saturday when I haven't had my first cup of coffee, yes. Pants are annoying. So if I just want to watch play a video game in my underwear, all relaxed and shit.
You don't want Xbox videotaping that?
It's even worse when the Kinect, when you turn it on when I'm trying to play video games in the morning, and you see it just go... It kind of just looks at you funny. It's like, eyes up here, mister. But I think the avatars are cool. They kind of grew on me, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're better than the Miis. I mean, I remember when they were announced, it was like, oh, you're just ripping off Nintendo. It's like, well, they kind of did it better, you know?
Can you rip something off if you make it 10 times better? It's still the same.
They look less like dolls and more like cartoon people, which is cool.
Which is what I like. I like being cartooned. So I'm a fan of the avatars. It's cool that they're bringing it along. We'll have to see. But... the one thing that we touched on but didn't really talk about a whole lot that now Microsoft is basically saying is their big game changer. It's not necessarily the hardware, because in terms of like looking at this comparison chart, I'll throw the link in the chat room here to show the comparison chart that we're looking at right now. But, I mean, hardware-wise, they're... not the Wii U. I'm really sorry, Ryan, but I don't even want to talk about that. Like, I mean, if you look at this chart, it's like Xbox and PlayStation have it, Wii U doesn't. So
it's stupid that the Wii U is on this chart, because any gamer out there who knows what they're talking about, including us, would admit the Wii U is in a different category. You know, it's not next generation.
It's not next gen in the way that PlayStation 4 and Xbox One are next gen. So
yeah, exactly.
In terms of actual hardware, they're pretty much bang on about the same. You know, they've got Blu-ray DVDs. They've got, you know, the same RAM, same CPU processing power. Give or take. Techies, don't rip me a new one.
I was going to say the RAM is a big difference. I think the DDR5 and the DDR3, I guess, from listening to a lot of developers this week, the DDR5 is just much faster and makes making games for the system a lot easier.
Okay, so fair enough. Okay, yeah. So there is that change. But, you know, generally in terms of hardware, if you take PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, pretty much in the same realm, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what everyone is saying is that it's not the hardware necessarily that sets Xbox One apart from PlayStation 4, but what they're saying is it's the architecture. So basically, we touched on it on Tuesday, where they have their kind of internet Windows interface coupled with their existing Xbox dashboard interface tied together using the Kinect interface. So it's kind of three in one, like talking to each other and working together. And so all of that together makes the Xbox One experience. And so basically they're saying their operating system, their software is what sets them apart. So it's interesting. I like the voice command thing. We don't know as of right now if PlayStation's going to support voice command, but probably not, right? From just everything we've kind of seen and heard.
Yeah, I don't really think so, and that's no skin off my back personally, yeah. Because having used the Kinect, and I know the Kinect 2.0 is faster, but really if I have a controller in my hand, unless I can multitask or unless I am multitasking, it's a lot easier just to use the controller.
Right.
I think Sony might do, at the very least, some sort of cursor system, because like the Kinect, the controller can be tracked by the camera. So maybe that, because actually I think the PS3 one doubles as a Move controller. So
right, it does, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of navigation, that might be a difference, but I don't think we'll see voice command.
Yeah, and I think another thing that we should probably say is that a lot of details about the PS4 actually aren't out yet compared to what we got out of Xbox on this last week. So, I mean, there's a whole lot of things that we don't 100% know about the PS4. We don't know about used games for, like, 100%. We don't know about what sort of external storage they're going to support. What else don't we know? We don't know about the voice command. We don't know about what kind of service they're going to offer in terms of their equivalent to Xbox Live. So right now they have the PSN, which is free, but we don't know if they're going to maintain that through the next generation. They might say PS Plus or nothing. You don't know, because, I mean, like, who wouldn't want that chunk of income every month from every single subscriber? Like, Microsoft is making a mint off Live.
Right, but if Microsoft has showed Sony anything in this last week, it does not pay to appear arrogant and piss off consumers. So,
oh no, definitely true.
And I know you agree, I know we all agree as gamers, yeah, that I think Sony's making the right move if they were to do a free / premium model.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely.
What they're doing right now works.
It does. And I think that there are a lot of people who would be less angry at Microsoft if they just had a choice. If I could sit down and if I could play Mass Effect with my friends without having to pay Microsoft a fee every month, then that would make me a very happy camper. They've kind of pissed me off, and they piss me off every time I see that come out of my bank account every month. I'm just like, God damn it, I have to pay again? Like, I haven't even used this for 2 months because I've been playing WoW, and yet there it is every month. Ding, ding, ding. Like, you know, I'm just like, Microsoft. So, I mean, PlayStation gets a huge vote in that column, saying that, you know what, you want to play with your friends, that's cool. You want our extra, like, perks, then you pay a little bit a month. And then I'm like, all right, PlayStation, let's have a conversation.
Well, I mean,
like, PlayStation's trying to woo me right now.
Yeah, it's sounding like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do this holiday season, yeah. But Wicked Sea Gaming in the chat room says that PlayStation actually showed Microsoft that paying for an online service is worth it because of the PSN outage. Like, maybe because it's a paid service, they put more work into it to make it more secure.
Well, and I don't know. I mean, I remember that happening. I remember reading about it at the time, but I don't ever remember why details being made available as to why that happened. I mean, I don't want to make excuses or anything for either party, for Microsoft or Sony. I'm not picking sides. I feel like PSN outage is often heralded as, see, if it was a paid service, it never would have gone down like that. And it's just like, well, maybe, maybe not. Like, I mean, they got hacked. It sucked. And, you know, like, it's quite possible that whether you paid for that or not, maybe it would have happened sooner if people paid for it, because people would have been pissed off at Sony and would have been like, that's it, I'm taking you down.
Right.
You know, so I feel like that's not necessarily an invalid argument, but I definitely don't think that it's the be-all or end-all of whether or not, you know, a paid model versus a free model, like, which one is more viable. I really think that it gets a whole lot more weight than it should.
Right. I think he actually corrected me. He said he was talking, he was, that all good points that we've made about paid versus free, but he was actually talking about the arrogance, I guess. The PSN outage, the hack was due to them being arrogant because they removed install OS. But, I mean, that was when Sony was sort of operated as primarily a Japanese company. And as we saw with their conference in February, it was being run by the American and European side of Sony. And we didn't really see a lot of the Japanese side. And that some say that that has actually helped Sony be less arrogant and sort of just say, like, you know, sit down and cross-legged it on the floor and say, developers, what do you want to see on the next system? Here's a tea. You don't want tea? Here's coffee. We want to make you happy.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what it felt like, right? It was really heart-to-heart. But with Microsoft, it's like, TV, TV, sports. TV, TV, sports, TV, Call of Duty.
TV, TV, Call of Duty. Dogs in Call of Duty.
That video is really unfair because but all press so conferences can be like funny. Sort of boiled down to that. I mean, Nintendo's probably like, Mario, 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 body, Zelda, experience, Mario. Zelda, Metroid, Donkey Kong, Mario, Pikmin, Pikmin, Wii, my body is ready. And Sony's no better, but I'm just, it's...
Wii, my body is ready? You could have picked a better timing on that.
My body is ready is an actual, I think, Wii U, like, they said
no,
that
I know, or but something. It's just, Wii, my body is ready.
But that's, I'm giving these people solid advice in creating a video. You want to get major YouTube hits from the Microsoft one? Go and cut together a Sony or Nintendo one. I mean, the most recent Sony one didn't feel that way, but anything from E3 would.
That was, I found, more so, like, I noticed it even when you're not in, like, a sped up this press conference in 2 minutes type video. It felt like it was just TV in your face all the time. This is what we're doing with your next Xbox, is you're going to be able to watch TV. I already have a box that does that, and it doesn't cost me hundreds of dollars. Or, well, most people have a box that do that. I'm a cord cutter, so I don't have a cable box. But most people have cable boxes that let them watch live sports and... TV episodes of things.
I will say this about people who do have cable boxes. I'm one that recently shifted back to cable. I mean, cable boxes suck. So I understand why Microsoft is doing this. And you know, anything that'll make watching TV via cable or satellite box easier gets a thumbs up in my books because, man, those cable boxes suck. Mm-hmm. So you can look at it from both ways. I mean, being a cord cutter, it's like, yeah, this is extra and I don't need it, but actually having cords in there somewhere, it looks like it could help, but I don't watch enough TV to make it worth it.
Yeah. So one of the last things before we dive into used games was the whole backwards compatibility thing, and Don Matrick. I know they said it at the press conference, and I'm just terrible with names, so sorry.
I call him
and
Don Matrix.
Matrix, okay. So he basically said that backwards compatibility was backwards thinking, and a lot of people have been saying, like, oh no, I can't play my Nintendo, my Super Nintendo games on my 64, like, screw you, Nintendo, and, like, making that argument, basically, that back when things were cartridges, you had different cartridges, it went different things in your next generation of your console, didn't play your old cartridges, and that's fine, but now that we have CD, DVD, Blu-ray, that's a pretty standard optical drive format. So the change from one to the other, you're not actually changing the medium that is delivered on. With the Xbox, I guess they kind of are, because they had the, you know, the DVDs to Blu-ray. They didn't have a Blu-ray disc in the last one, so I can kind of see that, but at the same time, like, I don't know, again, like, Ryan, I'm going to let you jump in here because you have a really good point, but, man, I wish that backwards compatibility at least one generation, given the size of games now, like, these are now games that people are sinking, you know, like, tens of hours into. Like, if you have 150 hours into Skyrim, it's a game that you really like, you bought it on the Xbox, and you want to keep playing it over and over and over again because there's constantly new things to explore and discover, new DLC, all of that. And all of a sudden, you know, you have to now have two boxes. So, go ahead, jump in.
The way he said it just, again, was very arrogant. He's kind of like, backwards compatibility is, you know, just backwards thinking. We're Microsoft, you know, we're the four color squares. I mean, we are very simple moving forward. We're not looking back. What's Vista? I don't know. But you can say that, look, guys, I mean, we had to change the architecture. This is a new generation, and it doesn't make sense to spend an extra $150 putting a 360 chip in there to make it play 360 games. This is going to be a problem for the first year, and then after that, you're all going to be playing these brand new games, and you're going to be like 360 what? You know?
Yeah, fair enough. And I think, I'm just going to read this out of the chat room right now, is saying, if you have your older system, just plug it in and play those older games. Are people getting so lazy that they can't get up and switch out some cables? Fair point, but I think that what the entire Xbox presentation was about was they were saying, Xbox One, this is the one box that's going to take over everything in your living room. You don't need anything else. Oh, and unless you want to play the last set of games that you just spent the last, you know, 5 years accumulating, then, yeah, you're going to need a second box. So I think, again, it's just this arrogance and forward, like, choom type vision that they have that they're not willing to move beyond. And it felt like I was getting told what I wanted instead of having a system delivered to me that was what I wanted.
Well, I mean, that's, you know? That's what Microsoft, I mean, does. I mean, that's just sort of the way they're just used to being a leader in the market. So when you look at Windows, that's like, well, screw you guys. That's going to boot into this Square interface. And then if you want, you can go to the desktop, but it's going to be an extra keystroke. I mean, they've been doing this for the longest time. And usually when there's enough backlash and people find they don't like it, then they'll make a switch. But something with backwards compatibility, I mean, they've been having a huge issue with PR after this event and just like saying, just wait, you'll like it. If I have to tell you one more time to wait, you're going to wait. You know, but Sony has said when they talked about backwards compatibility, they were very upfront about it. They said the hardware changed. It does not make sense financially to invest in having all PS3 and PSN games poured over. So we have to move forward. And, you know, they even offered an ultimatum. They said maybe via cloud gaming, you'll be able to play these classic titles down the road. But we can't make any promises. But that's the dream. But Microsoft... I'm sure Microsoft will sell us, you know, all the Halo games again on Xbox One. Maybe even Fable. You know, look at what Nintendo does. I mean, they have backwards compatibility on all their systems for the previous generation. That's the case with the 3DS. That's the case with the Wii U. But they sell you the older titles. Like, I can buy Super Mario Brothers for the NES on my Wii U. I'm paying them another charge, but, you know, I can't...
But still, I mean, that pays to port it over, and that makes sense for older generations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't see any problem with trying to... And, I mean, I know, obviously, there are problems, and it's bigger problems for companies like Sony and Microsoft that make bigger leaps with each generation. Like, the jump from the GameCube to the Wii and then the Wii to the Wii U are smaller than the jumps from... the PS3 to the PS4 and the Xbox 360 to the Xbox One. So I get that. It just, it's one of those nods to gamers, nods to fans, nods to your core base, because they kept toting the how many Xbox Live subscribers they have and how many people they have that have bought their console, and these, you know, millions and millions and millions of people are Xbox blah. And it's just like, yeah, so why aren't you catering to those millions of people that are already in your fan base who are gamers?
No, I mean, there's a great side to backwards compatibility, and then there's obviously the bunch of downsides for us and the hardware manufacturers.
Yeah, so we have to move on here because we're running out of time. And again, like, I mean, we did an hour-long special on Tuesday, and we still have so much to talk about with all this whole next-gen thing. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the biggest news we've had in years. Wow. So. Anyway, so the one big conversation that did come out wasn't really touched on in the actual launch event, but has come out over the last few days, is the actual conversation around used games and what we are going to be able to do and what we are not going to be able to do on the next-gen Xbox console. So, Ryan, take her away.
Okay, so this sort of stemmed from the fact that discs, games have to be installed to the hard drive, and they can be played without the disc, so there's no more disc checks. But that means that the license for the game is tied to your profile and your main hardware unit. So meaning that you can play that game on all the profiles attached to that console, and any other console that you're signed into your profile as. With me so far. So used games, borrowing games, lending games, how's that going to work? Is EB pissed? Their stock actually went down like 12% after all this stuff was going on, and they are adamant that Microsoft is being very helpful to the secondhand market and saying that they are totally supporting it. Don't worry. And there's nothing official yet. The official word is, again, arrogant as fuck, I want to say, but I'm trying to load the article.
Well, it's out there now, so.
Yeah, it says, Major Nelson, I had this conversation with Bob and Lou a couple nights ago, and I was saying that, man, Major Nelson just seems like an asshole. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but just the way he responds to this stuff, he's been saying, the ability to trade in and resell games is important to gamers and to Xbox. Xbox One is designed to support the trade-in and resale of games. Reports about our policies for trade-in and resale are inaccurate and incomplete. We will disclose more information in the near future.
Which basically means E3.
Yeah, well, does it? I mean, they have said
that the gaming news, the software news, is going to come out. Like, this was their hardware event. Their software stuff is going to come out in, with the exception of Call of Duty. All of their software stuff will be at E3. So I am assuming that that means we will get answers to all of these kind of used game questions, like full official, this is how it's going to be, responses from Microsoft at E3, which is a couple weeks away. So there's that.
And again, like, it's not, no matter how you swing it, it's not a positive story. So I think we'll get the news out of E3, similar to how we've gotten the little tidbits after this event. And basically how it's going to work, because the discs are tied to your account, when you take it into EB, this is just sources that have been talking to Polygon. They say that you take it to EB Games, or sorry for Americans,
GameStop.
GameStop, thank you. Let's go all the way back. Let's call it Electronic Boutique. They'll take the disc. They'll run it through a system that takes it off your account and transfers the license back to on the servers, says, you know, nobody owns this. So they can resell it. But in order to resell it, they have to pay Microsoft a fee. And that fee is going to affect a lot of people, positively for the publishers, developers, and Microsoft, because they'll get a chunk of that change, or all of it, rather. And negatively for the consumer, because EB is going to give you even less money. Or better yet, they won't take games that won't sell for more than like $40, because they're saying the activation fee might be, well, $30.
$10 or $15. Oh, really? Oh, geez.
Well, £35, which is like, this was a European story. And again, this is all up in the air.
Hearsay, yeah.
So, I mean, it's all on the seller that is going to be paying this extra money. But you get screwed in the end, because if you're taking a game in to sell, and I don't sell my games. I actually hate doing it, but
I've taken back a couple. I took back Halo 4 a couple weeks after it launched, because I played through the campaign and I didn't really think I was going to touch the multiplayer very much. So, and I got $35 for that 2 weeks after release, and then they flip it and sell it for $55. So, I mean, that's kind of a pain in the ass, but that's the biggest reason why I don't generally resell my games. The reason I turned it in, normally they give 30, but they were giving 35, so I got the extra $5 because I was pre-ordering my BioShock. So,
right.
But yeah, generally I find that they don't really give you, because I mean, obviously they have to make a profit, they have to keep their business going, so obviously they can't actually give you what the game is worth, but I just feel like, if I return a game 2 weeks after launch, like, I mean, they're flipping it and selling it for $5 less than what it retails for. And, you know, you just, it feels like this huge smack in the face. Like, anyways, I'm not one of the ones that takes games back. I buy used games, and usually it's after, you know, quite a while. Usually the used games I pick up are 8 months to a year, if not older. So. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you think it's a smack in the face to you. Think about if you're the developers that are, you know, shutting down their studio because they're not making enough money on games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it. Some of this money probably wouldn't save a studio that's already heading down the tube, but it could still help. And, I mean, that's one of the points that Microsoft is making in this move. But it really just, it's slowly going to kill the secondhand market. And mm-hmm. I don't have a
problem with developers getting money for, you know, what they create, you know. And I mean, if there's people who are going to buy it over and over and over again, then, you know, eventually, yeah, I can see how developers should get some money for it, but I don't know. It's the problem is it's a shift in the paradigm, right? Is they're changing the way that things are done. People are pissed off about it, whether it's going to be good in the long run for the industry or not. I mean, I've seen articles on both sides of the fence on this. And I mean, one I read was really, really good. And, you know, like they keep saying, oh, used games and piracy are just eating away at the market and everything else. And it's everything that's wrong with video games. And it's like, yeah, but if you look at all the, basically the article was pointing out all the big mistakes that both the big companies, developers, Microsoft, Sony, all the big mistakes that these people have made in the last 8 or 10 years, and just being like, used games didn't cause this to happen. You guys made poor decisions that are ruining video games and consoles and the way that we do things, and you're blaming used games and you're saying you don't have the resources to do things properly, but you make bad choices. Yeah. You are why we can't have nice things. Well, and so I can see both sides.
It's very true. I mean, if you, a couple examples, you can look at THQ and you can specifically point at Udraw for Xbox and PS3. Sold well on Wii, and they're like, well, let's make $1 billion, put it on Xbox and PS3. And then you have Square Enix that's blaming like Western games like Hitman and Tomb Raider for poor sales is why they're losing money. But then really when it comes right down to it, no, it's because mm-hmm. Final Fantasy is going down the tube. And you can't blame Final Fantasy because that's sacred waters. I mean, Final Fantasy VII's the greatest RPG ever made. But let me let you in a little secret. That was 7 games ago. Or maybe they're like 12 because they keep releasing sequels. But
I feel like one of the points the chat room is making is that small developers should get paid for their work, but Microsoft and other bazillionaire corporations should stay the F out of it. And very true. Like, I mean, I think that's where I am bristling about all of this, is I feel like Microsoft is taking their chunk when they don't deserve a chunk. If it's Microsoft's game, cool. If it's Fable, if it's Halo, yeah, give it to 343. But if it's, you know, some indie developer down the street, like, what has Microsoft done except for provide the platform? A platform I've already paid for with my hundreds of dollars or however much this Xbox One is going to cost.
Right.
So, I mean, if I've already paid Microsoft for providing the platform, if there's going to be a fee taken out of my used game, if I'm going to have to pay more on the consumer end of it for my used game, that money had better be going to the developer.
Oh, like, and it is. I mean, a portion of it as a publisher will go to Microsoft, right? Because they get a cut every time something. Well, we don't know. That's a good point. But all I'm saying is that a percentage will go to everybody involved in the development. But I can't believe we're throwing Microsoft under the bus, but not like EB Games or GameStop. Sorry, we're calling Electronic Boutique. You know, no one's throwing them under the bus. They are making 100% off of these jacked up used games. Don't you think it's time that they start, you know, doing what's right?
Well, and again, like I said before, and I think we're probably going to wrap this up very shortly because we're starting to go in circles, but with the money that goes to EB, and like I said, like I think that for the Halo example where I get $35 back and then they flip it and sell it and mark up 20, I mean, they have to make a profit somewhere because they provide me the service of a brick and mortar store that I can walk into and I can grab BioShock for $10. You know, like, I can't do that anywhere else, with the exception of Steam. Steam has kind of changed the game a little bit, and maybe that's the way it just has to go, is screw consoles, screw used games on consoles, just go Steam.
Well, I mean,
and PC. Like,
that's what someone was saying, is that in a perfect world, this would help Microsoft transition into sort of a Steam model. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people on Twitter are saying, like, no, this is Microsoft we're talking about. It's going to turn the Xbox One into the Games for Windows Live store as opposed to Steam, which is kind of like a giant stab and twist of the knife, because Games for Windows Live was awful.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll still have to see how everything shakes out at E3. And again, we're going to do a similar special. We did a special, in case people missed it, we did a special on Tuesday right after the Xbox Live, or the Xbox, I keep calling it the Xbox Live reveal, the Xbox One reveal.
The Xbox Alive Live. Live.
But yeah, so we did do a special on Tuesday that's available on YouTube and on Amove and on iTunes. So you can consume it in the regular way you consume your Gamers in Episodes. We are going to be doing another one on Monday, June 10th. after all of the after all the press conferences have happened from Microsoft, Sony, EA, and Ubisoft. We're very excited. Our special guest who was supposed to join us for the Xbox One but got hung up is definitely going to be there on Monday, to the point that I might actually tell you who it is before it actually happens. Oh. We'll have to see. I'm going to double, triple confirm with him the week before, but I'm very excited to have him on the show, so you guys should look forward to that. We will also still be doing our regular episode on the Friday and covering everything else that happens at E3. So that is E3 week on the Gamers Inn. Very exciting times. We did get some listener feedback about our Xbox episode, which actually came from Angus, who was works at 343. We had him on back in November to talk about the release of Halo 4. So he basically... I'm just going to paraphrase a conversation that we had. I'm not putting words in his mouth, but basically what he wanted to know was, in terms of features, what is it that the Xbox was missing? Where with the Xbox did Microsoft miss the mark? Because his role at 343 is he writes code. So for him, us saying... Yeah, a lot of the feelings that we... He doesn't understand feelings. A lot of the feelings that we expressed in
does
our Xbox...
Does not compute.
Does not... Exactly, does not compute.
Okay, he was on the show. He's not a robot.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Angus, I know you're not a robot. You're a very nice, Halo-loving human being.
Yes. So, basically, Ryan, in terms of features, did you feel that the Xbox... Aside from software in terms of third-party games, or even first-party, like Microsoft... titles, whatever. What did you feel that the Xbox specifically was missing? What was the problem with what they showed us on Tuesday?
Well, I mean, that's a really one-sided question in the sense that if I give my standard answer, it's like, he's right. They weren't missing anything.
Okay.
Because it can
then
play video games. No. I mean, I have more to say, but I think you have a more prepared answer. But I feel as though I'm giving you this the devil's advocate, Angus's right answer, in the sense that they weren't missing anything. Because he said
they
to me on Twitter, good news, you can throw a disc in. Yeah, well,
Which I think is basically where they missed the mark. And that's why I kind of put that second part of the question in there, because the original question is quite one-sided. Microsoft didn't necessarily miss anything aside from not focusing on gaming, and that is where I think they missed the mark, is that my biggest fear with the Xbox One console is that I will be in a game. And the reason that I play video games is to immerse myself in an experience. The experience is the game. The experience is not... Ryan is playing this thing. And I mean, the fact that it pops up right now and tells me when another person that logs on is playing the same game as me, or even just when they first log on, the fact that it pops up and says, like, Ryan is online, I was just like, God damn it. I was right in the middle of fighting a dragon in Skyrim. Like, I don't want a notification.
Well, you can turn those off, but you shouldn't have to.
But my point is that is the current generation, and it seems like they're just taking it to that other level where I feel like there's going to be I am afraid that there are going to be a whole lot of other things going on at the same time that is going to take me out of that gaming experience. And they're trying to do so much to give me an entertainment box when all I want is a gaming console. I want to sit down with my controller and be immersed in my game experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that they are going to pull me out of that with all the other things that they are trying to do. So that, I think, is where they missed the mark. They're not necessarily, like, everything that they showed us in terms of features was impressive. You can multitask, you can watch your cable through your Xbox, you can surf the net, you can have fantasy things. Like, all of the things that they showed us were impressive. It was clean. It was well executed. It seemed fast. That's great, but it's fluff. It's extra. I want to game.
And I mean, that's kind of what I tried. And this was...
It was over Twitter. It's very hard to phrase things in 150 characters, but...
I think the problem was that when we did our show, it was right after, it was very fresh, and we were like, we wanted to see... games. I mean, it's awesome that I can control my TV, and it's awesome that I can have Skype. Sure, there's lots of features that are great, but that's not why I'm going to buy a system. And when I said that to Angus, he's kind of said, well, good news, there's a disc tray and you can throw games in there. It's like, well, yeah, I know Microsoft isn't going to stop me from playing video games, but that's not what gets me excited. And you know, I mean, it's kind of like, okay, the way they were saying it, his first point was like, you know, you should have known, they were saying time and time again, that this was about the platform games or at E3. But it's sort of like saying, like, you know, going to see The Matrix 2 and then getting all the way through it. And then at the end, it's like, oh, but The Matrix 3 is when all the real cool shit's going to happen. And you got to wait 6 months to see it. It's like, well, great. I don't want to wait 6 months. I want the exciting stuff now. I mean, hopefully Microsoft's E3 presentation isn't as bad as Matrix 3, but...
And is going to fill in all the holes and everything else. Yes. I just feel like if you have hardware that is meant to play games, then what you do to show off that hardware is show it playing games. And I understand that they're saying that their game changer is their operating system and that their presentation was designed to showcase that operating system, which it did.
Right.
But I don't think that they showed what the hardware could do. And I think that that would have been better presented and it would have been better received had it been showing off a game. If the Call of Duty guy had actually stood up and said, all right, guys, I'm not going to waste your time. I'm going to play some COD. And just went, boom, 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 boom. Dog, fetch, or something, you know. Insert voice command here, you know. Just, you know, 5 minutes of him playing COD, even if it was the same scenes that we saw showcased. Clearly they've built COD at least enough to show a 5 minute demo.
Well, it's out in November.
If they had shown a 5 minute demo of any game, just someone standing on stage pushing buttons, showing the console working, showing that hardware working, then I think the entire gaming press would have just gone, well, shit, awesome. We didn't even get to see the PS4 at their event, you know. Like, it just, that one little thing would have made a huge difference.
Well, I mean, yeah, first, like, a lot of what I'm hearing is first impressions are everything, and Microsoft, you know, being the number one in the gaming industry right now and being very arrogant, like, first impressions mean nothing. You're, this is what we wanted to show you first, and what we want to show you second is gaming, and when you get the complete picture, you're going to be like, oh, okay, but I still don't feel like just because you're the leader in the industry doesn't mean you should still kind of think before you act. And I think there's been a lot of, and I know we're being really hard on Microsoft, and I'm sure this fall we're going to be like singing really different tunes. But
I hope we are, because I always want the best for the industry. I always want the best for console gaming. I love my PC. I have a whole lot of fun on it, but I do like my sitting on the couch experience. So I hope that they totally turn us around at E3 or later in the summer or whatever, but... in terms of what we know right now, what they've shown us, it's just, it's not what I had hoped it would be. I really thought that they were going to smack me over the head with something amazing, and it just didn't happen, so...
Yeah. And a lot of the confusion that's happening right now needs to stop. I don't care if they're saying, wait till E3. This miscommunication and confusion, if they want to have a healthy E3 presentation, they need to nip it in the bud. Like, early next week, you know, because...
Yeah, absolutely.
10-15 days is a long-ass time to look like an idiot. Just saying.
You saying this from experience?
No, I've never looked like an idiot. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I've looked like an idiot for a couple days, just ask my girlfriend, but, you know, like, I know that any longer than a couple days, and it's no fun looking like an idiot. So, Microsoft, you know, get on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think our chat room is pretty much agreeing with
everybody with agrees with us.
Yeah, I know, we're just gaming gurus over here or something. So if you want to connect with us on the show, you can visit us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com, or you can email the show at info@gamersandpodcast.com. you can also find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including Starcast, Campaign Roundtable, Biggest Fan, and This Week in Blizz. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at GISGamer. You can find Ryan at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+, as well as iTunes, where you can leave us a review. Before we go, I just want to give a quick shout-out and thank you to my brother Greg, who created our awesome music. You can find him on Twitter at SoundsInfluence. We would also like to thank Joel Duggan of StarCrossed Online, who drew our Twitter avatars and created our logo. You can find him on Twitter at Joel Duggan, or read his comic at StarCrossedOnline.com. So thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn, and remember to tune in next week.
the cloud doesn't make Halo 5 suddenly appear.
Yes,
or exactly. Fable 4, you know?